Rising for Refugees. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for joining First Coast Connect this morning. And just ahead, a look at how activists plan to join a national day of action on the global refugee crisis. That's just ahead. But first this morning, the city of Jacksonville says it has reached a deal with Jaguars owner Shad Khan to develop Lot J. That's the big parking lot next to TIAA Bank Field. Now, this deal includes more than $230 million in city incentives. Mayor Lenny Curry made the announcement yesterday with a video message. Let's listen.
I have reached an agreement for the development of the Lot J property next to TIAA Bank Field. This partnership, a group led by the Jaguars leadership, Iguana Development, and nationally renowned development partners, will result in more than $450 million of capital investment for the project. The terms will go to the Downtown Investment Authority and the City Council for their consideration, and I'm confident they will see the great potential of this agreement. The City of Jacksonville, as it often does for downtown development, will be a financial partner through incentives that are tied to infrastructure construction, completion-based grants, and tax rebates known as REV grants. The result will be an amazing array of mixed-use facilities that contribute to a downtown where people can live, work, and play.
All right, Mike Mendenhall of the Jax Daily Record has been looking into the deal. He's here now to tell us more. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
All right, so the mayor got into some interesting little details about the terms of this whole deal for Lot J. Basically, what can we expect here? What are the details of the deal?
Well, the deal just came out this morning around 6 a.m., so we're all still kind of digesting it. But the crux of the deal is that $233.3 million in incentives to be paid out to the project. You're looking at a mixture of tax rebates, grants, and then also infrastructure improvements to the Lot J deal. Or to the Lot J property.
Those are taxpayer dollars.
That's
a big amount of money, $230 million. How is the administration justifying this outlay of money?
Well, the way they're justifying it is that it'll bring economic development to the city. It'll increase property tax dollars over eventually. But then also boost tourism. Those are the kind of things that they're talking about that makes it worth it. Now that incentive package is actually roughly half of the $450 million price tag for the development.
This district is modeled after similar projects in Philadelphia, St. Louis, other cities. We're talking about a live venue, a residential tower, a hotel, and an office tower, among other things. How successful has this model been in other cities, Mike?
Well, I've personally actually experienced one in Kansas City, Missouri. The Cordish Companies, which is a developer based out of Baltimore, is responsible or is the co-developer on this project, and it brings a lot of people into the downtown core of Kansas City, and it appears to have been relatively successful in the other communities as well.
I mean, that's the idea, to get more people coming into downtown. Now, speaking of that, these renderings show development at Metropolitan Park. That's green space that's restricted, as you report in the Daily Record, by the National Park Service. It is believed that the city wants to swap out that parkland for the green space that would theoretically be created when they demolish the Jacksonville Landing. What do we know about that?
Right now, we actually don't know a lot of details about that particular project. That's been kind of the conjecture that's been going around, but there hasn't been a lot of hard facts to suggest that they're going to move that to the Jacksonville Landing. The city has been put on notice from the federal government that if they want to develop Metropolitan Park, they have to find a suitable replacement.
Which could or could not be the landing if they turn that into park space.
It could be, and green space is part of the tentative deal for the tentative plan for the Jacksonville Landing property. Now we're still waiting for any type of an RFP to come out on development of that, but that won't be until after the landing is demolished.
This Lot J deal calls for the construction of another live venue. There's already the Veterans Arena and Daly's Place in the sports complex. So now we'll be looking at three different places in this little footprint to go see a band or some other kind of live show. Do they think that can be viable? Another live arena put into this mix?
They seem to think so. It's the one difference between this live arena and the others is going to be the layout. So in Kansas City's Power and Light District, for example, the live arena there is a multi-level venue. It's kind of it's more of like a courtyard style venue with bars and restaurants kind of stacked on top of each other, surrounding the center stage. So that's kind of what this is. At least as we know right now, going to be modeled after.
Okay. And has the administration or Shad Khan's office, it's his company that will be developing this project, have they talked at all about any plans to protect all this new development from storm surge and flooding coming off the river in the event of future severe weather?
Well, as far as storm surge goes, I mean the property itself they are going to have to do environmental mitigation on it. I'm unaware at this point of any plans for storm surge protection.
Okay, now this is not a fully done deal yet, right? The city council and the Downtown Investment Authority have to sign off. It's expected they will, though.
Yeah, this is one of the mayor's top priorities, and the city council thus far seems to have been kind of in lockstep with that agenda. So at this point, it appears that it will move forward.
Okay, he's Mike Mendenhall of the Jax Daily Record. Read more about the Lot J deal there. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
We'll have details on our website today as well. Well, in other news this morning, the Trump administration says it is working towards a virtual shutdown of refugee admissions next year into the United States. That would cut the cap on refugees from 30,000 a year to virtually zero. In response to this, community leaders, advocates, and refugee resettlement agencies across the country are mobilizing for a day of action. It's coming up this Saturday, and it's called Rise for Refuge. Now, the goal is to encourage citizens to contact their legislators and encourage them to do everything in their power to return refugee resettlement to historic norms. Local activists are taking part in this day of action as well. As we welcome three of them right now, we're going to learn more. Mary Strickland is here. She's president and CEO of Lutheran Social Services of Northeast Florida. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Basma Alawi, Florida refugee organizer with the Florida Immigrant Coalition.
Yes, good morning.
And Lauren Whedon Hopkins. She's executive director of Catholic Charities, the Jacksonville Regional Office. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa.
And we are talking about Rise for Refuge right now on the show. We want your questions at 549-2937. What are your thoughts about the Trump administration's announcement that it will shut down the flow of refugees into America to zero? Local refugee resettlement agencies are sharing the details of their work right now on the program. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. All right, let's begin with Basma. You're with the Florida Immigrant Coalition and a refugee organizer. What is Rise for Refuge?
Thank you again, Melissa, for having me. So 2 weeks ago, I am part of the We Are All America campaign, and I am housed at the Florida Immigrant Coalition in Florida. And the We Are All America campaign started 2 years ago to lift up the refugees' voices and highlight the stories. And we are organizers and community activists all around the country. And we had our convening 2 weeks ago. And during our convening, we were talking about the event that happened, Lights of Liberty, and the kids in detention centers. And yeah,
that was a national protest about immigrants in detention centers,
right?
Especially children.
Yes. And during that time, we also heard about the asylum ban and the other asylum ban. And while we are in the convening, we heard rumors about zeroing the refugees number. So we were many of activists from different communities, and we are just tired of hearing the attacks after the attacks against our communities. So we try to find a campaign that unite the message and bring different communities together to say enough. because we are tired of all these attacks. And it's in the, first of all, it's a human issue. This is a family separation. And we came up with five demands. The first one is save the life-saving refugee resettlement program. The second is stop the asylum ban and protect asylum seekers. Third, keep families together and end child and family detention. Fourth, cut funding that fuels deportation, detention, border militarization. And the fifth, protect refugees and immigrants' family from being separated. And yes, it's happening August 3rd. There are more than 50 events already planned around the country. Here in Jacksonville, we have different community events planned. We have churches involved. Actually, one of the events that's happening this weekend on Saturday is done by the Wells Springfield Church. We will be having a like people can drop a letter to the Congress asking to stop all these illegal and immoral ban against refugees and asylum seekers. And there are other social media events happening that done by other communities and organization. And we have three other press conferences happening around Florida as well.
Okay, so lots of opportunities for people to participate in this. And there will be, I believe, a video released afterwards as well on social media. Let's talk to our two refugee resettlement agencies. There used to be three, but as the flow of refugees into America has slowed to a trickle, one of those agencies in Jacksonville, World Relief, was forced to shut its doors. There are two left standing, Lutheran Social Services and Catholic Charities. Let's begin with LSS Mary Strickland. Tell us about the refugee picture here in Northeast Florida, if you could.
Well, we have seen quite a diminishment of the refugees coming into Florida, coming into Northeast Florida. We saw about fewer than 300 people came in 2018. And what that means for us is we're missing these refugees. And what I want to explain to people is refugees are people that are coming from usually from camps. Many times the people we bring in have been in a camp for up to 20 years. They must be resettled. They do not have a place to go back to. What we do as refugee resettlement agencies is we make sure that when they come here, they can be self-sustaining. We work with them for 90 days. We make sure their kids get enrolled in school, that they get immunizations. We make sure they have jobs because these refugees have to be self-sufficient within 90 days of arriving in the United States. Also, people don't realize that refugees are vetted by six different agencies. It takes almost 2 years to be vetted, security-wise and medically. And they also don't realize that refugees have to pay for these services and that when they complete their 90 days with us, they get a bill from the U.S. government.
And so the bar is really high for refugees, always has been.
Yes.
But how is it affecting your work at Lutheran Social Services now that the White House has said, we're just going to stop refugees coming into this country altogether?
Well, obviously, that would be devastating for our programs. And really, since the ban started in 2017, we've reduced our staff by two-thirds. You know, we reduced our revenue, of course, because we have fewer people to serve. But I think it's also we as a community are missing these people. Refugees contribute. They have jobs. They work in the poultry plants. They do many things. Their children tend to be very successful. So I think it's a loss for our community, frankly.
We'll go to your calls on the refugee crisis and the National Day of Action this Saturday called Rise for Refuge. The number is 549-2937. Lauren Whedon Hopkins, your executive director of Catholic Charities, the other major refugee resettlement agency in Jacksonville. How has the new federal policy affected Catholic Charities? You've long been involved in this work, just as Lutheran Social Services has.
That's right. We've been serving the refugee community for more than 30 years, and we're working with the federal government and the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, USCCB, to welcome people fleeing violence and persecution. As Mary said, refugees go through a tremendous amount of vetting before they're coming into our country. And at Catholic Charities, our mission is to put faith into action to serve the most vulnerable in our community. We advocate for justice, human dignity, and quality of life while reflecting the compassion of God in Christ. So to us, a refugee is our neighbor. We're welcoming them. We love our neighbors as we love ourselves. And so for us, we just see it's just heartbreaking to see the decline in refugees. This year we've only resettled about 50, and last year we had 108. So if we continue at that pace, it just is getting smaller and smaller. And there's still a very vibrant refugee community here and people who need our services. And we are providing English for speakers of other languages. We have a match grant job program. We are helping these refugee clients just get acclimated to their new life in the United States and become contributing members of our community and just take care of their families, have a safe place to raise their families.
And to be clear, World Relief closed its doors because it was really only in the business of working with refugees. Your organizations, Lutheran Social Services and Catholic Charities, you do other things in addition to the refugee work, so you're still in operation. Is that an accurate picture?
That is correct. And we had about 20 staff in our refugee program, and we were able to move those staff into our emergency assistance program because that continues to be another major program that Catholic Charities provides. And so we've been blessed not to have to lose any of our staff. They've just moved into other programs. And we're continuing to serve the community in that way. And we also have an immigration legal service program. So we are recognized by the Department of Justice, the DOJ, and we're providing affordable fee-based services to individuals. We're under a DOJ accredited representative. And so what we do is we help people renew their green cards or employment authorization cards, file family petitions, and guide clients through the immigration process in accordance with the U.S. Constitution and federal immigration laws.
All right, let's go to some calls now as we look ahead to this Saturday's Rise for Refuge, a national day of action. What are your questions? It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Glenn is in Lakewood. Hi, Glenn. Good morning.
Good morning. I just have a quick question. With Lutheran Services and the Catholic Charities, there is a lot of people out here trying to get help from those services, and they seem to be stretched to capacity. I mean, literally only one day a month people can get help from those places. I'm wondering how adding more refugees to that situation would help the situation.
Okay. Mary Strickland. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you. Mary Strickland, what's your response to him?
Well, they're completely different programs. Yes, Lutheran Social Services does have a food pantry, a market that you can only access once a month because it's an emergency food pantry, and that those are the rules. We don't set those rules. And it's not at all a contest of funding between different groups of people. The refugee program is funded by the federal government. It is a very modestly funded program, and it certainly does not take away from any of the other services we provide to citizens of Jacksonville.
Basma Alawi with the Florida Immigrant Coalition. You came to this country as a refugee, so this is obviously very personal for you. What would you say to those listening who agree with the Trump administration's policy and say, we just shouldn't be in the business in America of taking in more refugees? What's your response to that sentiment?
Thank you, Melissa, again. I am a former refugee. I came through Lutheran Social Services. That's why I appreciate Catholic Charities and Lutheran Social Services, who's been doing amazing work in the community for refugees and non-refugees. As a former refugee who came through the SIV program among the Iraqi applicants that remain a concern for even the Defense Department, only 140 have entered so far this year, and more than 100,000 remain in the line, according to some refugees group. And over the last 17 years of war, big numbers of Iraqi nationals have risked their own life and their families' lives by aligning with United States diplomat and warfighters, providing essential mission support. The United States owe these people. And I want also to say, United States have been the root cause of migration to some of the countries like Iraq and others. And now the United States shutting the doors and breaking their promises to save people like us who served United States outside.
Let's talk as well about the history of refugee resettlement in America, if we could, Lauren. To shut down the flow of refugees to zero Is that unprecedented in modern American history? How does that conflate with past policy on refugees?
Well, Melissa, we actually, historic norm is 95,000 refugees coming into the United States. So going to zero would be completely unprecedented. Last year, we were at a cap of 30,000, which was already drastically reduced. So it really is unimaginable to think that we could go to zero.
And Mary, you know, the rationale the White House has given for this, along with attempts to institute a Muslim ban on Muslims traveling into America from certain Muslim majority countries, is national security. What's your response to that?
I understand that people worry about national security, but their worries are misplaced when you talk about refugees, because first of all, they are vetted more than any other people that ever come to the United States. The FBI, the Department of Defense. There has been no record of refugees committing crimes. Refugees have household formations and work. They work at a higher rate than regular citizens or regular people born here. So I think that the concerns are misplaced and they're not based in factual data.
Here's a tweet meanwhile from Jim. It's becoming clear that when we talk about migration, we have to also include climate change impacts. Some of the refugee action that's happening all over the world is driven by climate change. It's exacerbating the refugee crisis. It's forcing people from their communities. Some of the activity we're seeing at the southern border is in part driven by climate change. And so when we talk about this issue, it is important to get into that. Basma, let's talk about that for a minute, because people don't really necessarily connect those two things together. But there are more displaced people in the world right now than there ever have been before. There are, I don't even know what the number is, it's 60 million people that are considered refugees now on the planet. And some of them have been displaced due to the impacts of climate change.
So there are over 60 million displaced people. 20 of them are considered refugees because people does not become refugees until they register with the UNHCR around the world. Yes, one of it's climate change. And however, there are 0.01, I'm not sure about the percentage, that of these people are being resettled around the world. So we are not asking to resettle all the refugees around the world, but we are trying to stay at least around the 95,000 that's been happening for years. And now if we are closing our doors and zeroing the numbers, it's not just going to affect refugees, it's going to affect Americans who's working with these refugees in different departments and different organizations. So it's really going to affect the community here and impact our communities, even in Jacksonville.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about this Saturday's Rise for Refuge, a national day of action to draw attention to the refugee crisis, which is happening worldwide. At the same time, the Trump administration announces it wants to slow the flow of refugees into America to zero. What are your thoughts, questions? Here's an email from a listener. Refugees who come here after vetting and with the approval of the American government are welcome. That's different than someone who illegally enters our borders unvetted. You can be pro-legal immigration and against illegal immigrants. And we want to hear your thoughts. 549-2937. Susan is in Julington Creek. Hey, Susan, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you so much for taking my call. My heart is just so troubled because our whole national emphasis has always been on reaching out to people who are hurting. And my experience in Kenya and East Africa was that people really appreciated our stance on caring about people that are coming from difficult, horrible circumstances. So it helps our national security. It doesn't hinder. It really helps, in fact, by blocking people. And when you look at the whole globe, North America has, if you had 100 people in a village, We have over 10, we only have 10 people in that village, and we have over 60%, 70% of the wealth. So for us not to take people is such a sad commentary, and I'm a person of faith, and so we're just like not making sense when we don't heed the command of caring for each other. We are all related. Thank you so much. I appreciate your taking my call.
Thank you, Susan. Thanks for your call. Mike on the north side. Hi, Mike. Good morning to you.
Hello. I just have a quick question. So we all, I think, can agree that we want to bring in refugees, but is there a time that we should send them back to their home countries? And if so, when, to help them rebuild if we give them the skills and the resources they need here to help bring their country out? So hopefully we bring it to the point where they don't need to be refugees.
Okay, Mike, thank you for that. And Basma, what about that question?
I just want first to go back to the email. First of all, I believe there are no illegal human at all. We are all should be given a chance to live where we want to be. That's one. And two, if America closing the legal way for people to enter to United States, like being a refugee or asylum.
Seeking asylum.
Yeah, seeking asylum. So how are people going to be united with their families? So we are closing the legal way, if we are talking about legal. Second thing, I am a refugee who came in 2010. As soon as I arrived with my husband, I start working, paying bills, paying taxes, giving back to the communities. I volunteer every year more than 100 hours for different communities, refugees and non-refugees. Now, when we say when we are giving back a chance to go back, yes, I don't think any human don't want to go back and be united with their families. But first, if America started a war in Iraq, let America fix what's happened in Iraq, and then most of the Iraqis will go back. So either when we start wars around the world, I am American now, okay? So I don't know when
you're
when
you're a naturalized citizen.
I am citizen now. And just for this person to say, now they are asking me to go back, like where's my kids were born here? So I don't understand this question. This question is just hurting me so much now. As we heard before, the President Trump calling the congresswomen to go back. Like, this is not right. No one should say you need to go back. This is our home now. And yes, we want to be united with our families. Go fix the problem that you created in Iraq. And I don't think any Iraqi will stay here.
Here is something else listeners are asking me to put to all of you. A report this week that the U.S. Department of Justice announced on Monday that two Somalis who were living in the U.S. as refugees were arrested in Arizona. According to the feds, they were planning to board a flight to Egypt, where they were planning to join the ranks of ISIS. So what is your response to those who are saying there is the potential for at least a few refugees to plan to do this country harm or to do others harm? What's your response, Lauren?
Well, in our experience, the refugee clients we are working with are just so grateful to be in a safe environment and environment they can take care of their families, and they're just so grateful to be on their own and working. I would say I'm not familiar with this news story, and it may still be allegations, but I think in our experience in Jacksonville, it has just been a overwhelmingly positive experience.
And Jess emails the show, what is the difference between a refugee and an asylum seeker? Mary.
So a refugee has already been approved to come here. They have been approved by the U.S. government. They have been invited by the U.S. government. They are not seeking asylum. They have been invited here. Asylum seekers are people who are fleeing, say, violence or another condition in their country, and they're coming here asking for asylum. But a refugee has already been invited by the U.S. government.
And so this new federal policy would be an abrupt change from decades of official government policy on admitting refugees.
Yes, indeed. I mean, Lutheran Social Services has been bringing in refugees since the 1980s. We started out with Vietnamese refugees, and I still have a Vietnamese refugee working for me on my staff. These refugee resettlements follow wars. We brought in a lot of Bosnian refugees during the 1990s. Now we're bringing in many Congolese refugees from wars in Central Africa. So most of these people are fleeing wars, and they are here because the United States government has allowed them to come.
And with all of that said, how can people participate in Rise for Refuge, which is Saturday?
Actually, there is a couple of events already planned, but we are asking the communities to participate and have their own events. We are also asking people to endorse our campaign. We are asking organizations and churches and places of worship to endorse our campaign because we are taking all these data and numbers to the during the August recess to meet with our Congress and to show with numbers and letters and endorsement.
So how can they, if they're interested, how do they do that?
So I ask them to follow the social media of Rise for Refuge because all the events are already there. Like Lutheran Social Services have planned some social media event, and there are the writing letter with the Wells of Springfield also happening this weekend. So if people visit Rise for Refuge, they will have all the information that they needed. And I want to ask people to stay connected also. I want people to go to the Florida Immigrant Coalition Facebook page and like it. I want people to go to the We Are All America Facebook page and like it. Lutheran Social Services, Catholic Charities. If people really want to help, we have organization on the ground doing the work, and we always need help because if we are losing funding, we want this organization to stay and work and support these communities, and we can make it happen because our Jacksonville community have been so great supporting and donating and volunteering, and we need all of us to be united now.
Well, thank you all for being here and sharing this with everyone. Mary Strickland runs Lutheran Social Services, Lauren Whedon Hopkins, Catholic Charities, Basma Alawi, Florida Immigrant Coalition. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And up next, fighting sex trafficking in Florida, the work of ReThreaded, in a moment. The fight to ban assault weapons in Florida. I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
This Friday, activists are pushing for a proposed constitutional amendment on the 2020 Florida ballot that would ban possession of assault weapons in the state. Attorney General Ashley Moody says she's opposed. We'll have a closer look.
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Friday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
By the time today's babies are 80 years old, the sea is projected to have risen up to 6.5 feet. So what's being done to protect life on the first coast? At ADAPT from WJCT, you'll find stories about adaptation by everyone from the Navy to realtors and the city of Jacksonville. Join us now at adaptflorida.org.
This week in This American Life, Lulu's grandma has cancer, and her family in China is not telling her.
I'm pretty sure a lot of other Americans would feel the way that I felt. If somebody's gonna die, that it's their right to know.
Yeah, and but we just think that's not your business. You not live with her.
That's this week.
Saturday at 1 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, this is Keith Marks. Join me every Thursday evening at 11 p.m. for Avant Radio, a show of curious music for curious minds. Each show is themed, curated, and contextualized to explore new music. Come get curious on Thursdays at 11 on 89.9 FM.
Welcome back. Well, Rethreaded, the local nonprofit that assists survivors of human trafficking, is celebrating a birthday this weekend and a big new partnership. Founder and CEO Kristen Keene is here with more. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
And how exciting is this? You are celebrating 8 years in business. Congratulations.
Thank you. 8 years.
Wow. You started small. Did you have any idea it Rethreaded would become what it has become?
I had a little inkling because I'm the crazy dreaming visionary. Did I know how we would get here? I had no idea.
Yeah, but you got there. So let's explain to people that haven't followed your journey and what Rethreaded does. What is Rethreaded?
So Rethreaded renews hope, reunites dreams, and releases potential for survivors of human trafficking. So we provide long-term employment, and we couple that with mental health counseling and services.
Yeah. And literally, you help women, you call it sewing a new story.
Yes.
Women that can't find jobs come to work at Rethreaded, and you take all kinds of materials, all kinds of cloth, even leather from the airplane seats that Southwest Airlines has discarded, and you upcycle them into these beautiful new products.
Mm-hmm. And we believe that's what's symbolic, what happens to our women's lives, to humans' lives, when we, all of us have pain, and we think the pain's going to take us out, but you upcycle it with love and community, and it becomes something new.
Yeah, everything from scarves to earrings to bags, all amazing products. You have a warehouse just west of downtown that I encourage everyone to visit, and a store. And what's exciting to hear this week is you have an announcement to make about your partnership with Southwest Airlines. What's going on?
Yeah, we are so proud of Southwest Airlines. They have officially launched training for all of their 59,000 employees on recognizing signs of human trafficking. So we're super proud of them using their business for good. It's amazing.
And how will Rethreaded be part of that?
Well, Rethreaded is one of their upcycling partners. So it's amazing that they're acknowledging now. They're supporting us through their upcycling program. And now we're part of, we're a tangible evidence of what happens when people are trained in human trafficking, and how when we all do our part, we can see lives changed.
I would think anyone in the transportation business needs to be trained about trafficking, because of course, when a young girl or a young woman is trafficked, often they're moved.
Yeah. And even that's where they're recruited. Like, some of our women were recruited on buses here in the city. So wherever a woman is vulnerable, yes, or how they're moved sometimes is part of the trafficking.
So how will Southwest employees be trained? What signs will they be looking for?
Well, they're working with Polaris. So that's the national.
And that's a trafficking organization.
Yeah, that's the national trafficking organization. So that's where they have the hotline. So they're recognizing signs of human trafficking on if a woman looks uncomfortable, if a girl looks uncomfortable, if they notice on the flight, if someone, if the person next to them is controlling everything they're doing, if they're not allowed to speak, like all these just little simple signs that they're able to witness on the airplane.
And this is especially important in Florida, isn't it, Kristen? Florida has some of the highest rates of human trafficking.
It's third in the country. And Duval County is third in the state, which I'm just going to give props to our city. It's also third because our city is doing something about it, and it's recognizing cases. And it's so I'm actually proud of our city and its response to human trafficking. I think the next 3 years we're going to see a lot of services be formed, new services for survivors.
It's so difficult for survivors. And so Rethreaded story, I think, is so especially inspiring because women need support and you provide it. And so with all of that said, you are going to celebrate this weekend. Tell us about the Big Bash.
I am so excited about this year. The Jacksonville Jaguars Foundation is our sponsor. We have a $10,000 match from Riverside Homes. So that means every dollar you spend on buy our product or donate is matched up to $10,000. We have subs provided by Jimmy John's. We have Bundt Cakes. We have Jack Stavill's going to be there. We have a band. So it's going to be a night of hope.
This is at your location.
And it's at our warehouse.
And if you've never been to the Rethreaded Warehouse, mark your calendar. Come on out. It's Saturday night, right?
Saturday night, 6 to 9.
And check it out, because you really need to go over there and see what they're doing. It is such a cool thing in Jacksonville. I really encourage everyone to check it out. And if you haven't seen the product line, this is your opportunity to go enjoy the party and pick up some of these products. Now, I have several of them, including the Grace scarf. You're wearing one right now, which is a beautiful scarf. I also have these incredible earrings, which were made from the leather from Southwest Airlines airplane seats.
Yes.
And every time I wear them, people compliment me and ask me, where'd you get those? And so when you buy a Rethreaded product, it's an opportunity to tell the story of Rethreaded to people that might not know about it. And I would just encourage everyone to go to the party because you can pick up some amazing gifts for the loved ones in your life, and you can support an incredible business model that has just garnered national and even international attention. And Kristen, you came up with this almost 10 years ago, as we've been talking about, and it really is a unique model, which is so exciting. You hit upon a sweet spot, I think.
Yeah, it's social entrepreneurship. So we're trying to use business for good. So, and that's everyone can participate. So half of our funding comes from sales and half from donations. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to change the way that we can run nonprofits. And we give the gift of healing. A woman can work with us full time and receive counseling and receive care management all on site.
How many employees do you have now?
We currently have 15. We just hired 5 new women in the beginning of July. We've had 3 women leave this year. We have 2 women working at Amazon now. Another one of our women went to work at a different nonprofit. So we are seeing all the success of our women coming to be with us and then moving on to new jobs and new lives.
So you literally are helping women get back into the workforce.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah. They come and spend, we're trying to have 2 years, and then they get everything they need to heal and reclaim their life. And when they leave us, the cycle is done for themselves and their family.
Do you have hope of growing Rethreaded even bigger in the next 10 years?
Oh, girlfriend, you know I got some dreams. Yeah, and the thing is the issue of trying to get women jobs, survivors of trafficking jobs and back into the workforce is a problem in every city. So we would like to expand and help more women all over our country.
You can help Kristen with that mission if you go Saturday night, 6 o'clock, to Rethreaded's birthday bash. Go to rethreaded.com. They are just west of downtown, If you head over there, it's a warehouse district. Don't be thrown by that.
No.
Go on in, check it out, buy the products, have a good time. I promise you the woman or girl in your life will be thrilled with any of these products for their birthday, for the holiday, for an anniversary. You really cannot go wrong. As I said, every time I wear the earrings, people ask me, where did you get those? So it's really cool.
It's awesome.
So Kristen Keene, I'm such a fan, and I thank you so much for being here, and kudos on all of the success that you've created with Rethreaded.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you. And again, that website is rethreaded.com. Now that's Saturday night. In a moment, we've got some other ideas for your weekend, including Monster Jam. Yeah, we're going to meet the driver of the Gravedigger next. We'll be right back.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. 2 nights of Democratic debates. How are the candidates playing in the crucial swing state of Ohio? I'll broadcast from Cincinnati and speak with a group of Democratic voters to get their takeaways from the debates, what they think of the candidates, and what issues are most important to them. That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 1 here on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, Comic, actor, and writer Wanda Sykes talks about being a comic during the Obama era and the Trump era. Sykes does a lot of political material, as well as comedy about being an African-American lesbian married to a white woman. Her Netflix comedy special, Not Normal, is nominated for 2 Emmys. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
REI has been selling outdoor gear for more than 80 years now. Time, they figure, to change their business model a bit.
They're less interested in buying stuff and accumulating more things, and they're really interested in more entry points into the outdoors.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the CEO of REI, next time on Marketplace.
Today at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Dapper Dan, hustler, tastemaker, businessman. Less design swag, more designer swagger.
I consider myself one who creates clothes and uses it as a vehicle to fashion young minds. That's my goal.
Dapper Dan on his new memoir, Made in Harlem. Next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Here comes the conquering brother that varies and never ceases.
Welcome back. You know what that is, right? You know that sound. Yes, Monster Jam returns to downtown this weekend. Two big shows at ViStar Veterans Memorial Arena. We have a special treat. Kristen Anderson, who's going to be driving the fan favorite, The Grave Digger. She joins us now with a preview. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
So fun to have you on the show. The driver of The Grave Digger. And I think people might be surprised to find out that the gravedigger driver is a young woman.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm only 22, and I started driving gravedigger 3 years ago.
It's a family affair for you, isn't it?
Yeah. My dad is the original gravedigger driver, Dennis Anderson, who created it back in 1982. So I'm a second generation driver.
Wow. So you come by this honestly then, for
yes.
sure.
Mm-hmm. I have two older brothers that everyone's probably seen at the stadium before, but this is going to be my first time in the arena this weekend.
Okay, your first time ever in Jacksonville
yeah, this
doing
is my
the
first
grave
appearance.
Digger. Mm-hmm. How do you train to drive the grave digger? How hard is it?
Well, we have to go through a training process for a few weeks, but then after that, they kind of just let us go, and we have to make our mistakes in front of the crowd and learn as we go. So we get a lot of our seat time at the actual shows. So when I started in 2017, I'm way better than how I am. You know, I'm better
yeah,
now.
You've gotten better. Mm-hmm. Why do people love the grave digger the most?
I think that they really love my dad, like they, because my dad is the one that kind of paved the way for Gravedigger, and he was the one that was always super honest with his fans. He loved the fans. He was always giving back to the fans. So I think that's probably who made it the most popular.
Do you ever get hurt, or you ever have a scary moment?
No, I've never been hurt. I mean, it's happened in years past, but we've came a really long way with the safety equipment. So I've been lucky enough to never been hurt, but my dad's got some war stories he could tell.
How much adrenaline goes through you when you get behind the wheel of that thing and you drive it in front of a big crowd?
It's an instant adrenaline rush. I mean, they're 1500 horsepower. The motor sits right behind you. So as soon as you fire the engine up, it's buzzing already in your chest, and it is adrenaline shot straight to the head. I tell people it's kind of like skydiving and being in a UFC fight at the same time. You got a lot of stuff coming at you at once.
I think that, yeah, that kind of sums up the Monster Jam vibe. Okay, so there's a big bash Friday night outside the arena where people can meet you and see the Gravedigger, and then two shows this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. So three opportunities, right, to
yeah.
come out and see the Gravedigger and you.
Yeah, I'm actually doing a block party from 5 to 7 right before the Luke Bryan concert tonight. And
oh, it's we'll tonight.
Have, yeah, we'll have the Gravedigger set up tonight. And then we have pit parties that are before each show, too. So you can actually purchase a ticket, an exclusive ticket, to come down on the dirt and meet all 8 of us, see all 8 of the trucks, and meet all 8 of the drivers right before the show.
She's Kristen Anderson. She drives the Gravedigger. She's so nice. You would be amazed. She doesn't look like what you might think. And you can come meet her tonight outside Daly's Place and see the Monster Jam this weekend. Two shows this weekend. Thank you so much for being here. Have fun.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so that's one idea for your weekend. Finally, this hour, speaking of things to do, we're going to chill out a little bit with Damian Lamar. He is host of our Taste Test Radio here at WJCT, also a member of Friends of Hemming Park. It's Taste of the Weekend. Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. And how about the Gravedigger? She's such an interesting personality,
very,
isn't
very
she?
Very, very demure. Yeah. I'm surprised that she drives that big, giant truck.
I know, right? So there'll be lots of fans coming out for Monster Jam. What else is happening?
Yeah, so this weekend, my top picks, the picks for the weekend or the Taste of the Weekend, starts off with the 6th annual Fly Socks and Tees. This year's theme is United We Stand. And it's going to be Saturday, August 3rd, hosted by DJ Al Pete, and it will be held at 1904 Music Hall.
Very nice. And Al is an intern here at WJCT and a talented performer. Go see that. Let's also talk about this Friday's Brew Box launch at Hyperion. Our own producer, Heather Schatz, is involved with Brew Box Foods. This is food for microbreweries.
Absolutely. Finally. Finally, food goes there. So Friday, August 2nd, from 4 until 11 o'clock. Hyperion Brewing Company welcomes Brewbox Food, and they'll actually have some food along with some snacks for you to enjoy. So the event's from 4 to 11, but you stop by between 6 and 8, you can have an opportunity to sample Brewbox products such as the Caprese skewers and the sun-dried tomato and ale pimento cheese bread.
This is a genius idea. I'm so excited for Heather. They're going to be sending food around to all your favorite microbreweries in the area. I'm going to come out Friday night to Hyperion around 6 o'clock. It's Brewbox Foods. Now, let's talk about Luke Bryan at the arena.
Oh, yeah.
We just heard about that.
Yeah, everybody loves Luke Bryan.
Yeah, he's got a huge fan base.
He does, yeah. So he will be there tonight at the Veterans Memorial, Vistar Veterans Memorial Arena, and the tickets start at $35. You can still get them while they are available at Ticketmaster.
Okay, and as we heard, the Gravedigger and the driver, Kristen, will be out front beforehand, so you'll get kind of a double shot of excitement. And, you know, we're going to be doing some country music here at 89.9 to celebrate Ken Burns' new PBS documentary about country music. So keep listening to us for that. And let's talk really quickly about your show, Taste Test.
Yeah, absolutely. Taste Test. This weekend, I'm actually really excited to bring on my co-curator for this weekend. We're going to try something a little different where her name is Jihan Grant. She was formerly of the Culture Council, and she is now, she goes by I Am Energy. So we'll have a little bit of taste and energy to experience. So Saturday night at 11 o'clock, tune in to hear this wonderfully curated, masterfully delectable show.
Nice. It's Taste Test, Tuesday and Saturday nights on 89.9 at 11 p.m. And he's host Damian Lamar. Thanks for giving us taste of the weekend.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.